Episode 1229, The Golden Age.
Welcome to the Sci-Fi Christian, bringing you theology at warp speed. I'm Matt Anderson.
And I am Ben DiBono, and we are moving into a new era of the podcast where we don't have music. I forgot that I'm not wearing headphones.
Is it a permanent era? I don't think so.
I really think it is. But we'll see what people think. We'll see what people think as we go. So this episode's actually one that's been... It's interesting to me because sometimes I have ideas, and it's not uncommon that we don't get to them right away just because we have a lot going on and we have other, you know, we limited recording time, and, you know, we have fish episodes and everything to record. That's over right. On Patreon. And so sometimes, like, I'll have an idea and then we don't get to it for a while. And then by the time we'd have time for it, it's kind of petered out.
Yes, that does happen.
That does happen.
Yeah.
And I think that's
a shame, actually.
It is, but I think that's kind of a natural creative thing that some ideas come and there's a limited time where you have them caught and you either act on them or you don't. This one's a little different because let me see if I even have here in...
It's been months.
It has been months. So the date in my OneNote for when I wrote this outline for this episode is February 2nd.
Wow.
So we're over 3 months later. And every week, I'm just like, I want to do this episode, So we're getting to it a little earlier than we normally would tonight because it's just on my mind. It's on my mind. And so one of the things that happens to me when I read Lord of the Rings out loud to my kids, as I do as they each get older, and we just finished the most recent reading, is that the book is different every single time. And I've talked about this with great art, like... If you rewatch a truly great movie, you're not actually rewatching anything. You're watching a new thing for the first time. Why? Because great art is infinite in its depth, and new things stand out to you. And then you're also different as well. And something like Lord of the Rings is a great example of this, because I first read Lord of the Rings at 10 years old, something like that. And the things that stand out to a 10-year-old are very, very different than the things that stand out to a 20-year-old and to a 30-year-old and now to a 40-year-old. And so it's true that there's some things in your life that you love at age 10, and of course you don't love as you grow up. Well, that might not be true for this generation, but for most people, that's true. And vice versa as well. There's things that just don't click when you're younger and then they click when you're older. And I wouldn't say that that's necessarily better or worse, but there is something really special about those works that, like Lord of the Rings, grow with you, and there's something new and profound in there every time you revisit it, and at every different stage of life, it speaks to you in a different way. So I found this experience as I've now read Lord of the Rings out loud, I think 6 times, you know, so I've made it through, maybe it's only five or six, somewhere in there. But I've now read it out loud to several of my kids as they've gotten older. And so every time it's a new experience. And every time I think it produces different episodes that we do here because there's new things that are coming out for me. And one of the themes that stood out to me before, and we may have mentioned it, but it not to this degree, is this idea that Tolkien develops, and it's not original to him, and that's part of what we're going to see here tonight, of Middle Earth as a place where the best days are behind it. Right? Not just in the sense of the elves leaving Middle Earth and all of that, but even like the Numenorean kings, and you have Minas Tirith, which is a shadow of itself. And there's this theme of tragedy that runs throughout it, but there's also this theme of being unable to compare to the past, to not live up to what came before. Okay, and so that's very interesting to me, and it's a very profound thing. But as part of what really prompted me to think about it more this time is that this isn't an original idea to Tolkien. And in fact, what I started to think about is that if you dig into great literature and really just across cultures and across times, you find the same theme, sometimes quietly, sometimes very, very loud, this idea of something great preceded us and we don't live up to it. Like something, you even see this in the Bible and the Gospels, of like where talking about John the Baptist is the greatest since Moses and Elijah. You think of references like that. There's a sense of the great patriarchs, the cloud of witnesses, as Hebrews talks about. All of this behind us, and yet here we are trying to live up to it. I think it's a concept that we have in Christianity, especially parts of Christianity that recognize saints, and that you have the saints, those who came before you, and you're still in the fight. You're not a saint yet, but you're striving to get there, and you're praying for your salvation, all of that. And so there's this profound idea that goes way beyond Tolkien. And so what we see then is Tolkien's tapping into that. He's not originating it. But there's one place we don't see that. There's one part of human history we don't see that narrative. In fact, we see the exact opposite. Now, right now, and say by now, I'm going to say the last 100-ish years especially. And what we find there is a flip narrative. It's the inverse of that one. So what I want to start with here.
Just before you start in, I'm going to say what I think you're saying, that in past years, we've respected the past, but in the current generation, they think that right now is the best?
It's different than that. Let me break these down a little bit, because that's the foundation, but it goes a lot deeper in both directions. So there's two competing narratives that we see. The first one, which is our time, would be a narrative about progress. It's not just, and this wouldn't say that now is the best time ever, even a good time, but it's one that we as humans are gradually progressing. Things are getting better. Maybe not linearly, but they are heading in that utopian direction. This is like Star Trek future, and I'm not ripping on Star Trek yet. I would for different reasons. But this is like everything. You're going to get to that kind of post-scarcity world. You're going to get to a point where humanity is enlightened and we've arrived as a species. And so the story of humanity is gradually progressing toward that. You hear things like the long arc of history bends towards progress, and the moral arc of history is always bending towards progress, meaning that yes, we have mistakes, but things are getting better. We're getting more enlightened, more progressive, all of that. It's this idea that we're becoming the masters of the universe. So it's like, oh, 500 years ago, you got sick, you went and saw the leech doctor, and he attached a bunch of leeches to you, and those poor benighted fools, and now we have modern medicine, and it's miraculous, and it is. And we, 100 years ago, we had 80% of humanity is in absolute poverty, and now we've shrunk that number way, way down to a microcosm. We had people who were living in slavery, and yes, slavery still exists, but the percentage of the globe that's enjoying freedom and prosperity and all these things is increasing, and everything's getting better. Maybe not moment to moment, but if you were to chart all this on a graph, the trend line is up. And what's interesting about this is that you'd be tempted to say that, well, maybe this is a right-wing thing or a left-wing thing, but both sides in their own way would be proponents of this view, right? Like from a left-wing perspective or more classic, progressive perspective, you might focus on things like moral issues. You might focus on reductions in racism and greater acceptance of human culture, multiculturalism, and all this stuff. And from a right-wing perspective, you might focus more on the economic developments and the prosperity. And you even heard like in Trump's second inauguration address, remember what he said? He said the golden age of America starts now. And it's this idea that the golden age is coming. And all of this has been kicked into overdrive by our tech overlords with the advent of AI. Like, this is the gamble. Forget everything you think or like about AI, blah, blah, blah. The gamble that the Elon Musks and Sam Altmans of the world are running right now is that AI is going to produce this type of utopian place for us. We're going to move into a post-scarcity society. We're going to eliminate want. We're going to eliminate suffering. We're going to use this miraculous technology to solve medical crises. And whatever issues we have, you might personally have a problem, but you know what? Let's say mental illness runs in your family. Like, through the power of AI, we're going to be able to get you the therapy and the medication and all of that you need. And yeah, it might be a little wonky now, but you flash forward 50 years, we are going to be in the golden age of humanity. Okay, so that's one view of the world. And then the second view is one that is the Tolkien view. And it's one I would call Paradise Lost. And it tells the exact opposite story about humanity. And it's this idea of gradual erosion, that every generation, again, maybe not absolutely, but over time, the trend line is pointing down, and every generation is a shadow of the one that came before. You don't measure up to your fathers who didn't measure up to their fathers, and so on and so forth. We look back and we see greatness not only that we don't achieve, but that we can't achieve. You know, I mentioned in, we just did an uncensored episode, and I was talking about my own experience this last weekend, where I was building this carport for myself, and it was a lot of work. And I'm out there, and I'm just like feeling physically built up. And part of what goes in my head is every generation for most of humanity, this would have been a walk in the park.
You think?
Meaning that type of physical labor, physical intensity. And here I am, like, do it for a day. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I never want to do that again. You don't measure up. We don't measure up. The first marathon was literally a run to marathon to Greece to report on a war. And the guy falls down dead. And now we're trying to do it for recreation. It's like there's this greatness back there. We don't measure up. So the golden age, this is something where the golden age is lost and we're heading down. Our hope is in eucatastrophe. Our hope is in that eternal redemption. But we have no hope that things are just on their own going to start getting better. Go back to Tolkien for a second. He has this phrase, and I know we've talked about this before, but it's worth revisiting, this phrase of the long defeat. You know, Galadriel, he puts this into the words of Galadriel when she's talking to Frodo at the mirror in Fellowship of the Ring. And she talks about how we have forever fought the long defeat, meaning that the story of the elves in Tolkien's universe is one where they show up and things gradually diminish and diminish and diminish until they have no choice but to leave, right? Well, Tolkien, again, he's not inventing this. He's tapping into this age-old idea that things are going to get worse. You've also pay attention to Tolkien to when he talks about how, you know, so much of the story is focused on fighting in a situation that you find hopeless simply because it's your job to stay faithful in case you catastrophe happens, that anti-catastrophe, that unexpected grace that comes up. And those things are going to happen. And ultimately, Christianity tells a story of a world redeemed and reborn, but Christianity also tells the story of a world that is literally kicked out of paradise, and things are going in the opposite direction. And you see this same thing, not just again in Tolkien, you see this in Dante, where he's coming to, as we've been reading Dante over on the Patreon feed, and Dante realizing his own failings and his own humanity and the greatness that he doesn't live up to and the way the church itself doesn't compare to what it ought to be. I love the Tennyson poem Ulysses that is quoted in Skyfall, and those lines are just so good. We are not now that strength which when of old moved heaven and earth, but that which we are. This is Tennyson putting those words into the mouth of Odysseus. So it's like Odysseus, the great hero of the ages, is looking back and saying, I'm not who I should have been. We aren't that strength that used to move heaven and earth. We're mere mortals. You're like, you're Odysseus, and you're saying that. That's part of the power of Tennyson's poem, is to be able to tap into that. You know, you see this in Homer, you see this in Virgil, always this sense that something used to be great and now it's gradually diminishing. And this is such a fascinating dichotomy to me, because anytime when I look at the modern world and I see something that's just stark contrast to the rest of humanity, not, you know, this culture in this time, but we're talking humanity, the whole deal, the whole shebang, cultures, time, cut across time and space, and we're standing in sharp contrast to it, I'm automatically suspicious, because either one of two things is going on. Either number one, they're all wrong and we finally figured it out, or we are missing something and it's to our peril, and if we don't figure it out, we're going to pay the consequence for it. Well, I know which one I'm betting on. So the question then is, which one are we living in? I want to, before I attempt to give an answer to that, a few things to maybe think about here. That number one, part of what leads to these radically different views isn't necessarily different facts. Both sides do have their own facts, and they are true, right? Like, it is true that I would rather go to a modern doctor than to a leecher in ye old medieval Europe. Like, that is true.
We can agree on that.
We totally agree on that. It is true that economically, people are in a better position than they used to be 100 years ago. Right? Like, the percentage of people living in absolute poverty, the percentage of people who don't have access to clean water and to enough food and all of that has gone radically down. That is true. Okay? But it's not a question of if the facts are true. It's a question of the hierarchy of values. It's a question that says, what does that mean? And is that in itself an absolute good? Does that tell us the whole story of humanity? It tells us a good story. An important thing, we want people to have access to basic needs and to not die of starvation. We want to solve childhood hunger and homelessness and mental illness and physical illness and all of these things. But do those on our own tell us a story of humanity? Let me illustrate this. We've talked about like the idea of what would happen in a post-scarcity society. And like there's this very shallow and pathetic notion that, well, if we get to the point where AI is able to provide for everything, nobody who doesn't want to work will have to. And that's often said as though it's a good thing. Well, now we've moved out of the realm of fact, and I know that's a speculative fact, but let's just take that as a given. Let's say that 10 years from now, 5 years from now, AI will get to the point where nobody who doesn't want to work won't have to. Is that a good thing? Well, now we're not in the realm of facts. Now we're in the realm of values, okay? And let me say very strongly, I think that will be a disaster for humanity. I think that'll be a disaster. Most people, not for everyone in every place, but most people will not thrive under those conditions. Most people will destroy themselves in that condition. Most people will become worse people as a result of that. And so you start to see where, wait a second, the facts of prosperity and progress aren't value-based facts. They're not telling us a story of humanity. They're telling us about the conditions humanity lives in. And maybe improving those conditions is good, but not if it comes at the expense of our souls. And so we need to evaluate what is the state of our souls. We need to land on a hierarchy of values. So in between the time when I originally wrote these notes and now, I came across a really interesting article from the New York Times. And I think it tells us a lot. And I want to summarize it a bit. So the headline of the article is, "These couples wanted to have children. Rising costs are stopping them." Okay. So obviously, everything's expensive these days. And you and I both know we got 12 kids between us. I think you're at 4. Are you at 4 or 5?
At 4.
Fantastic. We're at 12 kids between us. And so we're both sympathetic to the fact that raising kids is tough. So this article, if you go through it, profiles three couples and their difficulties in being able to afford children. So the first one, and I'm going to read a few excerpts from it. So it's introduces us to this couple who live in Utah. I think they're in their 20s, or yeah, both 25. And it talks about how they got married a couple of years ago and they had a vision of having kids. And it says, "But that vision shifted once they settled into their new home in Mapleton, about 50 miles south of Salt Lake City. The 2,000-square-foot house came with a $20,000 down payment and a $3,200 monthly mortgage." That's expensive. "The financial pressure combined with other rising costs such as gas and groceries made them rethink parenthood. They realized that even with one child, they would most likely need more space, and moving to a bigger house in their price range would probably mean leaving Utah and their families behind." I was like, wait a second there. Wait a second. The issue space? Like, think of the conditions, you know, think of like a Dickensian novel.
Yeah.
And you've got like some mom with 10 kids in a entire home the size of the room you and I are in right
now.
Okay, something's off there. Second couple, which we'll go over very quickly because this was a couple that was upset about the cost of IVF. It was a same-sex couple. They wanted to have IVF. I'm glad it didn't work out, because IVF is morally bankrupt. It's evil. You know, it is. As a Catholic, I stand against both abortion and birth control, and IVF takes the worst of both of those and combines it into one. Horrible. I'm not going to go on about IVF today, but I'm glad that one didn't work out. The third couple, okay? This is a couple in their late 20s, early 30s, and here's how we picked up. Married in 2023, they have shaped their relationship around exploring new places together, such as the local park, what? Maybe a KOA campground? No, Japan, Bali, and Morocco. But that lifestyle has become more expensive. In the wake of the war in Iran, airlines have been raising prices and checked bag fees to cover soaring fuel costs. Gas is expensive and really puts a damper in your frequent flights to Japan. The couple have felt it firsthand, so this is now we get into their real-world impact. A flight to France for a wedding trip in September cost them $1,600 round trip, around the same time the year before a similar trip was just $400. With a child, they added, going to that wedding would have been more difficult, and here's the real sacrifice, and meant fewer trips this year. And then it goes on to how the cost of pet daycare and all of this. Okay, I know
you
these
say
are
pet daycare?
Pet daycare.
So they have pets, but not kids?
Yes.
Now let's go on from that.
I know these are three cherry-picked examples. I know these don't represent anyone. But the fact that the paper of record, the New York Times, profiles them for the world as an example of why you can't have kids. These are wealthy people.
Yeah.
Like, full stop. These are wealthy people. And we're saying that they can't have kids because of the cost, because it would make them not be able to fly to Paris for weddings. That 2,000 square foot house is too small for even one kid. For even one kid. And my takeaway from this isn't that that is everyone in every case, but that those are three representative of a sickness that is in most of us to one degree or another. And it's a sickness that says that those incredible, miraculous prosperity increases we've felt as a species. Yes, they have had very good things and things I wouldn't want to give up. And they've eroded something inside of us. Because yes, most of us aren't as extreme as that. But most of us, if we're honest, have at least a touch of that same sickness inside of us. So let's go back to Tolkien. Because I think Tolkien has a great quote in here. And this is from Return of the King, and I think it's Faramir talking. And in the movie, he takes Peter Jackson correctly takes this line and he puts it in the mouth of Gandalf. And he's talking about the Numenorean kings. If you're not up on your Middle Earth, the Numenoreans are like the ancestors to Gondor. Okay. So Faramir says, "Death was ever present because the Numenoreans still, as they had in their old kingdom, and so lost it, hungered after endless life, unchanging. Kings made tombs more splendid than houses of the living, and counted old names in the rolls of their descent dearer than the names of sons. Childless lords sat in aged halls, musing on heraldry. In secret chambers, withered men compounded strong elixirs, or in high cold towers asked questions of the stars, and the last king of the line of Anarion had no heir." That's not just a piece of fun lore to file away for your Middle Earth trivia night. Tolkien is getting to the root of the sickness. He's saying this is a prosperous and powerful kingdom. Sound familiar? And how did they lose the Golden Age? They lost the Golden Age because they got more invested in their physical comfort and wealth than in their children. Like this, that's not the only sickness we can point to. But that is the same thing in that New York Times article. That's the exact same thing. And what Tolkien's describing is a golden age, wealthy, prosperous, powerful culture that did not build on its prosperity and blessings, but instead used them to put a gun to its head and commit suicide. And the New York Times just chronicled the exact same things for us. So, which of those narratives is true? Well, it is true that we are prosperous and blessed people. It is true that we've undone a lot of evils of the past, be it slavery or segregation or, you know, the horrible oppression that dominates so much of human history. And it's also true that we are not exempt from the same thing that Tolkien and Dante and the rest of humanity has put their finger on. And if we don't recognize that, we will be those old kings who are building your rich, expensive tombs, which I can't think of a better descriptor for your 2,000 square foot child-free house than an expensive tomb. And our culture will commit suicide, and we will become less than what we even are today. So the Golden Age... not likely.
I mean, I know this is where I would hit the music, but I want to ask you, what do you recommend then? What are you saying? What do people do with this? Let's say we have a young listener who's going, like, has some choices to make.
I think that, you know, for most people, it would be go get married and have kids and put that above your physical prosperity. You know, make sacrifices. And what that looks like in your life can look different. Go sacrifice to build something that will endure beyond you. That's what you should do. You know, go to church. You know, educate your kids. Read them great books. Start to recapture the things of the past. Get married young. Make the sacrifice. You know, don't go to the Paris wedding if it means not doing those things. It's as simple as that.
All right, listeners, well, thank you, Ben. And listeners, thank you for listening and for your support. That's all from here. I'm Ben Anderson.
I'm Ben DeVoto.
And we are the Sci-Fi Christians, and we are signing off.
Yeah, I told you I had one in there.
All right. So what age are we in?
Oh, we're in the age of slop. Everything's slop. Forget bronze, silver, tin. We're not even in the rusty copper age.
Okay. Well, that's kind of sad. I guess the whole episode was a little bit sad, but you're just trying to wake people up, I think.
Well, you don't, you got to realize where you stand.